Bayern Munich continued their red hot start to 220. I'm going to restart because that was terrible. That's a bit of a tongue twister. Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern Podcast. Bayern Munich continued their red-hot start to 2020 with a dominant 5-0 win over Schalke at the Allianz Arena yesterday. Hansi Flick fielded a bit of an unconventional starting 11, leaving out new right-back addition Alvaro Odriozola, but the boys in red still got things done in an emphatic manner. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm here to talk about that with my friends Tim Richards.
Hello there.
And Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hey.
So, like I said, Bayern Munich made it 2 out of 2 wins in the Bundesliga for 2020 so far, absolutely smashing Schalke at the Allianz Arena yesterday. Tim, if I'm not mistaken, you were at the game, so what was the atmosphere in the stadium like?
It was great. From the very beginning, Bayern looked really, really dominant, and usually that's a good thing for the crowd. Everybody was up and jumping. There was constant singing. I've never been to the Allianz Arena where the atmosphere hasn't been incredible. To be fair, I've never been to the Olympic Stadium where Bayern were before. Bayern's fans are great. And as much as I love the guy, I do think Niko Kovac was wrong when he said that Frankfurt fans are the best in the world. I think I'm always going to have to side with Bayern on that. The atmosphere was fantastic. Everybody was really excited, really happy. And it kind of, the same thing can be said for the players as well. I saw, because where my seats are, I'm in fairly good position to pick out facial recognition to see who's enjoying it, who's really focused on it. And yeah, all of the players looked really happy and really excited to be there. It was great. It was everything that you could ask for.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. It was perhaps not quite as enjoyable watching it on TV halfway around the globe, but it was still very, very fun to watch them just destroy Schalke like they did yesterday. Sebastian, kind of like I said in the intro, Hansi Flick used a starting 11 that I don't think anybody, definitely not very many people, would have predicted heading into the game, playing a midfield three of Thiago, Joshua Kimmich, and then Leon Goretzka as a sort of almost 10, a number 10 almost. Ivan Perisic on the left flank, Thomas Muller on the right flank, so definitely a bit of an odd setup. How do you think that worked? I mean, I know the scoreline shows 5-0, but do you think that using that lineup made a significant difference going into the game?
Interesting question. I guess I want to start by saying that I was highly critical of that lineup. When I saw that, I was very surprised and definitely not in a good way. Because I was really skeptical if that would work out well. Of course, that I'm not the biggest fan of Thiago. Goretzka didn't look like a player for me who really needed to start this game because he hadn't been so great. And he had been struggling for a while now. And of course, I had been calling for Tolisso earlier. So I was surprised about that part. And I guess we all agree that in the past, Müller and Perisic have not always been a great combination on the wings. Then also, I'm not a huge fan of Pavard as a right back, so I would have been quite happy to see Alvaro Odriozola on that position. But yeah, I guess that's to be expected, that he's going to need some more time before he gets the start, I guess. But I definitely have to say that they played very well, and I think it was a good lineup after all, because, especially Perisic and Müller, I would say, interpreted their positions in a great way and really made this, kind of tough lineup work. Because, I think we have been critical, for example, of Müller as a winger, but the media and a lot of Bayern fans have been even more critical of that. But I think Müller was brilliant on his side. Perisic was very good again, like he was last time. And I think that was the most important part of that. And that's a big part of what made the rest work. Müller found a way to not need Pavard too much on offense. But later, when Schalke kind of didn't fight as much anymore. They knew that they wouldn't win this anymore, and then they played a bit more defensively, and then Pavard got forward a bit more and so on. But yeah, I think it really worked out very, very well. And of course, Goretzka is also a huge part of that.
Yeah, let's start by talking about that attack, and I guess we'll kind of work our way back. But I'm right there with you. I didn't suspect Ivan Perisic and Thomas Müller playing as wingers to really work out as well as it did. I've been fairly critical all season long about Perisic, but in the last two games, I mean, he's really, really stepped up. And he didn't have any goals or assists yesterday, I don't think, but still, it was a very good display, much like he put in the week before. And he's starting to, I guess, kind of grow on me. Once everyone's fit, I'm still not sure I'll want him in the starting lineup, but he's coming good. He's kind of showing that maybe Bayern's executives kind of knew what they were doing with bringing him in. But Thomas Müller as a right winger isn't ideal. Obviously, he's better in the center, but Thomas Müller playing on the right is still a whole lot better than a lot of the people who start on the right wing for various clubs across Europe. So the way they played together was excellent. They interpreted their roles very well. Like you said, I think Leon Goretzka had a lot to do with it. I think on the left flank, the way that Alphonso Davies is playing had a whole lot to do with how Ivan Perisic can, kind of cut inside and interpret his role as he does. Because, I mean, right now, Alphonso Davies is essentially playing as a left back and a left winger at the same time. And, I mean, my goodness, he was incredible again against Schalke, both defensively and offensively. And, I mean, he's just a huge player for the team right now. I'm guaranteed on the starting lineup every week. He's been so influential. But Tim, what did you make of the starting lineup, specifically looking at that attack and how it worked together?
Yeah, I think much like everybody else in the world, I saw that and didn't inspire, not necessarily inspire confidence, but I guess flair. Like, I think when the attack has at least one of Coutinho or Gnabry, you're almost expecting it to be like really fast, very skillful, very exciting. When it's Perisic and Müller on either side, it's like, okay, this is, you don't want to say that you've bottomed out, but it's not the most exciting lineup that it could be. But then of course, 90 minutes later, it's like, okay, turns out that was actually a really good move. Well done, everybody. It didn't really do anything for me when I first saw it, but obviously, Perisic is at Bayern for a reason. Müller is capable of playing as a winger. Like, he performed most of the treble winning season as a winger. So it's not like we're fielding people that have never played football before. I think having somebody like Perisic in the team is imperative. I think he, in Perisic, is there a pun to be made there?
In Perisic.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we'll take it. It's so great to have somebody like him show up, and even it's kind of a bit like Thiago or Kimmich or Vidal. Like, even on their bad days, they're still trying their absolute hardest to win the ball back. It's really great to see that even, in the bottom tier of like wing partnerships, we're still capable of doing really, really well. We were talking yesterday at halftime that I think, Sebastian, you said that you hadn't necessarily been that impressed by Goretzka, and I knew exactly like where you were coming from. There was something about the way that he was playing didn't quite, I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe, but it didn't quite look like it was meant to be. And obviously, if he was playing as a 10, then if we're going to be playing anybody as a 10 or just anybody behind the striker, I would always prefer it to be Thomas Müller. But saying that, the stats don't lie. He was obviously one of the most important players. He scored a fantastic goal. I guess like over time, he kind of like really showed what he was capable of. And the fact that he is so physical and such a commanding presence, there's a reason why people are kind of likening him to Michael Ballack. And obviously that's massive praise. And while Goretzka did well, I'd never go so far as to say that he was as good as Ballack was on his day. I think there was everything about this game was really, really enjoyable. Even you know, the first glance, it looks like this is going to be quite a tedious game to watch. Everybody played at full throttle, and it was excellent. I've not really got anything bad to say. Strangely, I usually do.
while we're on Goretzka, let's talk about him for a second. Garrett's not on to just heap praise on Goretzka, so I guess I'll kind of take that role for now. I was totally impressed by Leon Goretzka yesterday, and this is after being very, very disappointed with how he's looked otherwise so far this season. But I think he played that kind of half hybrid number 10, number 8 kind of role perfectly. I definitely see the comparisons to Balak. I'd say he's like a Balak Thomas Muller kind of hybrid kind of thing going on there. But I thought he was phenomenal. He was a lot better on the ball than he usually is. He was putting himself in the right positions. He had a great finish, a great assist. He could have had another one, but it was barely called back for offside. He was all over the place. And like Sebastian kind of hinted at earlier, I think that his versatility and the dynamic kind of way he plays allowed Thomas Muller and Ivan Perisic to be a little bit more influential from out wide, you know, coming inside, interpreting space in various ways. I think Goretzka was absolutely fantastic, and that's for you, Garrett. I know you're listening, but I do. That's also how I feel. I think it was certainly impressive, but the question has to be raised, and then we'll come to you, Sebastian, because I know you definitely have some things to say about this. Given how Goretzka is playing, and I would also say Thiago over the past two games, I know you may disagree with me there, but given how our midfield kind of looked yesterday and has looked over the past couple games, what does this mean for Kroton Tolisso?
I guess we're going to have to see about that. The good news here is that we have three players now on top of Kimmich that have looked good in their last appearances. And I guess that's more than we were able to say about our central midfielders in a while now. So I guess that's a positive. If I compare Goretzka and Thiago for a second, I think I like Goretzka better. Even, I think you said that quite correctly, that he was all over the place. And I guess both in a good way and in a bad way. And I guess that was why it's so hard to precisely rate his performance in that game. Because, yeah, sometimes he was just in the right place. And then in other situations, he looked a bit lost and not quite knowing where he needs to be. And so it was kind of, very mixed for me, but then brilliant at times. And then I guess the positives outweigh the negatives at some point. But yeah, that's how I saw Goretzka. With Thiago, it's again a bit like what I said last week, I would say. Offensively, he looked pretty good. Nothing to criticize about that. But there were, again, these Thiago moments. And I just fear, what's going to happen when we play against a team that's just as good as Bayern, just as big of a name, just as great of a club, where there's just going to be more pressure in the middle. And I'm just still not convinced that Thiago is going to be a great option in a situation like that. Because, when I think about, like, playing Liverpool last year or something like that, I fear that Thiago might just fall apart in a game like that. Because even against the weaker opposition, not that Schalke is weak opposition, but in general terms, he's working quite well. But we then still see these moments where the pressure overwhelms him, or where he just has a blackout kind of, or where he tries to go down for a sliding tackle and is completely off. And that just keeps me concerned, because even with those two great games in a row by him, both had those flaws in them. So, So turning to Tolisso, I think there is really nothing negative to be said about Tolisso at this point, and I think he definitely needs to get chances very soon. I would definitely think that we cannot just say, okay, now Kimmich and Thiago and Goretzka have all been great, so let's just roll with two or three of those and then completely ignore Tolisso. That would be a huge mistake, I feel. Because, he was very good when he played last time, and he definitely needs more minutes.
Yeah, that's a lot to take in there. On Thiago, I think that you used the term or the phrase Thiago moments, And I think that's a very fitting way to describe him, because both for better and for worse, he is a player whose game is kind of defined by moments. He has moments of brilliance going forward. He makes some incredible passes that you just wouldn't believe possible for a player to make, and it comes off so well. Or he'll have this great dribble and he'll beat a man, and it's amazing. But on the flip side, defensively, he has those same moments that don't work out so well, where, like you said, he'll go in for a sliding tackle or just completely misjudge a challenge. He'll go to, I guess, tactically foul a player and completely miss. And it puts us in a very, very tough position. More often earlier this season, was just giving the ball away in a dangerous position. I would argue that having Kimmich next to him, it kind of not totally negates, but kind of lessens the danger of having Thiago play a bit deeper in midfield. But you're absolutely right. I don't think that we can just say, okay, they've worked together, so just don't give Tolisso any playing time. I think that he has to kind of be rotated in. Tim, I'll kind of ask you a similar question, since we were talking about Perisic and Muller and attack earlier, and how this kind of ties in with the midfield as well. What does everyone's form right now and how our team has looked without Felipe Coutinho mean for Coutinho going forward?
I really liked the very brief cameo that he made. Like, as soon as he came in, he did this great move where he pulled the ball back and then moved forward again in one motion and took out two Schalke players. And, you know, it's like 75,000 people all went, ooh. Like, it was great that he's capable of doing that. The thing is that it's so good coming off the bench, much like it was with Perisic. I remember talking about, I much prefer to see Perisic come off the bench rather than start. And now here I am, like, saying, oh, he was great in the starting 11. I don't think it's ever been a realistic possibility that Bayern do actually buy Coutinho. Because, you know, if he plays as a 10, then we've got Thomas Müller, we've got Goretzka, we've also got Thiago. He's played as a 10 before and has been very good in that position. I think if Coutinho can show that he is a starting left winger, I think he needs to scrap the possibility of playing centrally, because if he wants to, like, I don't know if he wants to go back to Barcelona. Judging by how they played against Valencia yesterday, I wouldn't want to go back to Barcelona. Like, he has the chance to become a starting player at another top club, like a club that's going to accept him. If he can show that he is a starting left winger and can provide in big games, provide in small games as well. Like, going back to Balak, I remember he would show up in the Champions League, but then when it came to the Bundesliga, he just kind of didn't really care at times, like just after he signed for Chelsea. Not that I'm still bitter and remember that at all. But I think that's kind of what he needs to do to show that he is worth the money. Because at the moment, it's not really a matter of, he's not auditioning himself for Bayern, so they pay that clause. He's auditioning himself, I guess, kind of in a way for himself to show, I am worth this much money. There is a reason why a club spent this much. How much was it? Like 120 million?
A lot, a whole lot.
And it's a lot of money. And don't get me wrong, I really like him, because when he's in good form, he is such a fun player to watch, much like Thiago is, much like Leroy Sané is, much like even Renato Sanchez. Like, I'm currently watching the Lille PSG game at the moment. When they're on the ball, it's just very fun. But he needs to be able to do that every single week in a position that Bayern aren't already stacked in. And if he wants to do that in the number 10 position, then he needs to seriously outperform Goretzka, outperform Müller, because obviously that's his preferred position. Like, he fills in at right wing. Right now, I can't see him walking into the starting 11 in the middle. If he is willing to play out wide, then great, because like, he is a good winger. Like, he was a winger for Barcelona, and okay, it didn't really work out brilliantly. He was still pretty good there. But right now, I don't think he has a set place at all.
In my opinion, right now, the question of whether or not he should be made permanent, well, I mean, I don't even think that's like on the table for the price that the buyout clause is set at, with, you know, $120 million, I think you said, maybe half that, a little bit more than half that, potentially. But I think you're right that he has a lot to prove, not only to both Bayern and Barcelona, but also to himself, that he can still be that just world-class, game-changing player like he was at Liverpool. And I think you're spot on that he's going to have to resign to playing on the left wing if he wants to be able to do that, because he has had a few great games, a few extremely good games at Bayern, but we play better with Thomas Müller centrally, or in the case of yesterday with Leon Goretzka playing centrally, and I don't think that he's going to be able to nail down a number 10 spot playing for Bayern. Regardless, what it means for the rest of the season, I guess, is that we've got some good competition. I think that's what we're kind of learning, and kind of another positive about yesterday's game. And Sebastian, you talked about this a little bit, but we actually have midfielders who are playing well now. It's not only Joshua Kimmich playing well, and now we have to see who can fit around him, but we have genuine competition to see who can play week in and week out, and that's nice to see. By the way, Tim, great to see that you're still able to work in Renato Sanchez into the podcast, even though it's been half a year since he played for the club.
Yeah, I'll happily go out of my way to... Basically, it's kind of like a personal... It's not personal. I've never met the guy. But it's like my own sort of vendetta. Like, I'm going to follow closely the people that I supported that other people necessarily didn't. So I think, like, wherever Niko Kovac ends up, I'm going to be keeping a close eye on them. I'm going to be hoping that they do well.
And so I guess that's one name ticked off the list, and now only need to work in Rafinha.
Yeah, I was about to say...
Well, that's entirely possible, actually.
Yeah, he's probably upset that he missed out last week, Sebastian, is what I was going to say. So he's got to get the other names thrown in. Let's talk about the defense yesterday real quick before we wrap up yesterday's game. Sebastian, we've been, less so you than anyone else, but we've been fairly critical about Jerome Boateng on this podcast throughout the season. And I would say it's definitely rightfully so, because he hasn't been so great. But I think yesterday we'd probably all agree that every single member of the back line, even Benjamin Pavard playing at right back, looked really good, really on top of their game. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, there were very, very few good moments where Schalke really, got into the box or anything. So, yeah, they really did a very, very good job. I think I would mention Davies first, because Davies was also offensively very, very, very great. I think he looked so good. All those runs on his side, yeah, it was just brilliant again. But also, I can say a lot of good things about Boateng, I guess. He's actually the second name I would mention from the back line, not to take anything away from Alaba or from Pavard. But yeah, Boateng, I think his long passes to Müller were a big part in making Müller on the right work, because especially in the first half, Pavard played relatively defensively. And yeah, Müller just... Yeah, he decided to completely not play the normal winger kind of shtick, but he just waited up front sometimes for a long ball by Boateng, and that worked pretty well. One of the goals, I fail to remember which one, did start out of such a long ball from Boateng, right towards Müller. Yeah, that was great, and I think, yeah, as I said, that was a big part of making this kind of a bit of a strange winger setup work, actually. Yeah, and of course, also Pavard, in the beginning I was slightly critical of him, but yeah, that also worked out well in the end, and Alaba was as good as he has been since he's playing at center back, I believe. So, yeah, really nothing to criticize there for me.
You know it was a good game, other than obviously the 5-0 scoreline, but you know it's like an exceptional game whenever you can look at the full starting 11 and not have a single... criticism about a single serious criticism, I guess I should say, about any of the players in the starting 11. That just kind of shows it was a top performance from Bayern. From goalkeeper Manuel Neuer was obviously great. We don't even have to talk about him. All the way up to striker. But since we're talking about defense, Tim, right after we recorded our podcast last week, the day after, Bayern Munich finally signed a right back in Alvaro Odriozola. He joins from Real Madrid on a 6-month loan. No option to buy, apparently, in the clause. That may not be a big deal, and we can talk about more of that in a second. But first things first, Tim, is this a good move? Because obviously Bayern have needed a right back. We've talked about that a lot. So was this the move that Bayern needed?
I think it's a very good move. I think he's a talented guy. When he was at Real Sociedad, I think, he was one of the like a very highly rated young guy. He's still very young. When he went to Real Madrid, he kind of like he's competing with Dani Carvajal, and I don't like Real Madrid, and I don't like praising anything that they do. Carvajal is a very good right back, so he's not going to be able to get much game time. And also saying that, I don't think Zidane's really the best person to be coaching him. Like, Zidane has worked very well with guys like Cristiano Ronaldo, Luka Modric, Benzema, like people that are already kind of like well established. He's good at getting them motivated. I can't really anticipate Odriozola really picking up much from Zidane, but I think when he was at Real Sociedad, he was very gifted, really, really quick, like outstandingly quick. So having him on one side and Davies on the other, I think when you have our two, you know, slowest wing options of Perisic and Müller, it kind of doesn't really matter at that point. Or even if we have Coutinho, who's obviously not as fast as Gnabry or Coman. I think this is a really good move. I would have loved to have seen him play yesterday, because I think it is always great for somebody to have their first game at Bayern in front of the crowd. Because I think, you know, from like a storytelling point of view, I always talk about like the storytelling point of view, but it is so, I think it does make a huge difference if like your first experience at the club is to have all of these fans like chant your name. Like, it just kind of alleviates any nerves that you may have. I think in terms of what he can offer, yeah, I'm really, really, really excited about it. I think the fact that there's no option to buy, I don't think that means that Bayern can't buy him. I think it just means that there's no set price. Saying that, Zidane has said that he needs time and he has his place at Real Madrid. So, you know, there's obviously a very strong chance that Bayern don't buy him. But for the time being, he's talented, he's quick, he works well in a team that moves the ball quickly, which is what Bayern have started doing recently. I'm excited. I'm very excited, and I can't wait to see what happens next.
Yeah, on the whole buyout clause issue, I've seen a lot of people saying or criticizing, I guess, the board because there's no buyout option in the loan agreement. I would say maybe just chill out on that a second. I think the fact that there's not a buyout clause is more indicative of how Bayern wanted to get this deal over the line quickly than it is anything else. So instead of sitting down with Real Madrid and trying to work out some potential buyout clause and spending more time trying to work out a deal, they just said, we'll take him on loan. And if they decide they want to buy him in the future, it's not like the fact that only have him on loan without a clause completely prevents us from making an offer for him to make it permanent in the future. And I think given our relationship with Real Madrid, I think that's totally possible. So just as kind of like a preface, if he plays well at Bayern, I think it's totally plausible, maybe even probable, that this will turn into a permanent move. Just the fact that there's not a buyout clause included up front doesn't mean it's time to panic from Bayern fans. So, Sebastian, you were probably the most vocal of everyone about our need for a right back heading into the winter market. What do you make of this deal?
Yeah, I'm very happy with this deal. Of course, it would have been great if we also had a buyout clause for him. But yeah, I mean, you cannot force that, especially not in the winter when you don't have as much time as you would like. Maybe, I guess, we really, as you said, we wanted to get this guy in quickly and not waste any more time. So yeah, I'm very happy. He's just the kind of player, and he's young, and yeah, he's everything I was hoping for in a right back. So yeah, really, from a on the field kind of perspective, nothing to criticize here in terms of a non-existent buyout clause. Okay, it could have been even better, but yeah, still that's not a huge criticism. I guess we need to also keep in mind that Real Madrid is only going to be able to have so many right backs on the squad without having those people get unhappy. they are also getting Achraf Hakimi back. So, yeah, I doubt Odriozola is, if let's imagine he's playing well and we want to keep him, I really doubt he's going to want to go back and face the perspective of being their third right back over staying at Bayern. And so, yeah, I think there's every chance that we might be able to sign him for a reasonable price at the end of the season if things work out. And if not, I think the board probably also has in mind that, okay, if we don't get that one, maybe we can sign Hakimi from Real Madrid, because obviously, as I said, they are probably not going to want to go into the season with three right backs and one and a half of them being unhappy. So I guess, yeah, there's every chance that we're going to get a deal at the end of the season if things work out well, as we hope. So yeah, I'm really not too concerned about that. I guess in general, I would say maybe not get any more loans right now. Because yeah, there's just an ideal level of how many loans you can have, and there's definitely a too many there. So yeah, but other than that, very happy here.
I think Odriozola, as far as like as a player goes, is one of, if not the best options that was linked with a move to Bayern. I mean, obviously João Cancelo is a bit more proven as a player and would have had a more immediate impact on the first team probably. But I'm definitely more happy with Odriozola than I would have been with someone like Meunier or probably even Lucas Klosterman. So I think this is a great deal. He's a very attack-minded player, which is great for Bayern, who usually use very attack-minded fullbacks. And then obviously, I know Tim, you'll agree with this, most importantly, he stands at 5'9", so he meets the height requirement for a
That's
fullback.
That's good enough for me.
Yeah, right in the perfect height range. For a fullback. So with that,
only just
very, very close. But with that deal kind of wrapped up, it does kind of seem like Bayern Munich are done with the winter window. Let's talk about a couple moves that are about to take place or have taken place for the past few days that kind of do relate to Bayern Munich. First of all, Dani Olmo just signed for RB Leipzig earlier this week. And a report came out, I'm not sure the validity of it, but claiming that Bayern kind of tried to sweep in at the last second, get that move over the line in favor of them, but Olmo had already chosen RB Leipzig and so ended up there. Sebastian, do you think that's the type of player that Bayern would need, that they should be looking for in the winter window? And then how upset would you be if it's true that we made our move for him too late and it didn't work out?
Yeah, for me, Olmo is just the right kind of price range, the right kind of age range. Maybe not ideal because he's a more natural 10 than a winger, but I think he's good enough as a winger. So if it is true that Bayern tried to intervene there and get Olmo, I'm pretty sure that it was the same kind of thing that we did with other players, where we signal our interest at some point and then completely drop the ball. And then in the end, suddenly we are right in the middle of that again. I fear that that's probably what went on there. Yeah, even more frustratingly, Steven Bergwijn looks like he's going to Tottenham. Why are we not targeting a player like that? If that's such a transfer as possible in winter, that's even more frustrating from my perspective, because that would be exactly the kind of winger we need. Yeah, it's kind of frustrating to see what great transfers are suddenly possible in winter. A lot of them by Bundesliga clubs. And yeah, we are acting like we can't do that, at least nothing but alone, and definitely not on offense. Yeah, I really think that's kind of the range of players we should be interested in more. Everything between an Olmo or a Timo Werner, something like that, where you don't really have to break the bank to sign a guy like that, like you will have to with players like Sané or Havertz. You really need to, yeah, nail these mid-range kind of signings. I think that's an integral part of getting as successful as we are. I think that's yeah, those are at least as important as the big signings, I feel. And yeah, that's where we are lacking right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, Bergwijn was going to be the other name that I brought up, because I know he's someone that's been on your radar for a while. And I guess there's still a sliver of a possibility that he comes to Bayern, because it doesn't seem like the Tottenham deal has quite made it over the line. But it's very, very speculative at best, and it almost seems certain that we won't be going for him. Tim, do you think that the reason that Bayern aren't really going all in for players like this, that or aren't pushing to get these types of transfers done, is because they think that they're better off waiting till the summer and spending big on guys like Sané and Havertz? And if that's the case, do you think that's a good approach, or do you think that we could kind of have one and also have the other as well?
I think what Bayern have done this season in exchange for those kind of like mid-level transfers that Sebastian suggested is we've got loans in. So like, I think Perisic, okay, while he was rumored to go to United for like 70 million a couple of years ago, and we've got him for, well, pennies compared to that. Like, we've got him on loan, I think, with the option for about 20 million.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the sort of level that Bayern probably should have gone for. The fact that they've not gone for it permanently is quite surprising. I've never understood Bayern's approach to the January transfer window. Well, to be fair, okay, no, that's a lie. I've understood completely what their approach is, because it is very much, we will get a player if we absolutely have to. I kind of admire that sort of quite considered and efficient approach. So summer is for spending, winter is for if it's absolutely necessary. I get it. But it is quite surprising that they seem to be one of the very few like top tier clubs that do that. I remember when Chelsea bought Fernando Torres for, was it 50 million euros? Like, just an extremely high amount of money. And that's sadly the only one that I can remember, which is very annoying, because more would really help me put home this point. But clubs have started to spend more and more and more in the winter transfer window. I think PSG are one of them. United are rumoured to be buying Bruno Fernandes from Sporting for about 55 million euros. Okay, I would say that is a fairly necessary transfer for them, because that team is not doing brilliantly right now, which is great. It makes me so happy. I don't know if I like that strategy of, okay, we'll spend when we know that it's the right time to spend. If they're saving money for for big transfers like Havertz and Sané. But saying that, Bayern are an outrageously rich club, and weren't there quotes from somebody saying, "Oh, we need to find somebody that's going to fit our financial structure." I'm like, what financial structure? Like, you're one of the richest clubs in the world. There shouldn't have to be like really tight. And again, saying that, that's probably why they've managed to do so well, is the fact that, you know, they've to be fair, this point is all over the place at the moment. They've managed to get themselves to a position where they have a lot of money to spend, and they know that you could do what AC Milan do, where they sign players to really, really expensive, really long contracts, and then all of a sudden they're left with nothing. And then, you know, a year after being in the Champions League and being regular contenders, they're like mid-table in Italy. I don't know. I think there's pros and cons to saving. But I think if there's like one positive to take away from it, it's that Bayern are going to be aware that, you know, the players that they may be after would still be available. Because if there was like ever any risk, if let's say Leroy Sané is their number one target, if there's ever any risk that he suddenly is going to another club, I think Bayern would step in. The only thing that I can think is that, I say the only thing, I've rambled for about 5 minutes now, but if there's one thing to take away from it, it's that the fact that Bayern aren't doing any business right now is probably some indication that they know exactly what they're doing come June and July, or like whenever the transfer window opens. So I think no activity now doesn't necessarily mean no activity in the future. That was the worst answer. I'm so sorry.
No, you're totally good. It's just a lot to kind of digest, but I definitely hope you're absolutely right about that last point, that no activity now means lots of activity come summertime. And I do think that Sané and Havertz, or, you know, insert whatever name you would like there, those names that they're waiting on in the summer, I think that does play a bit into their hesitancy to enter into the transfer market right now. I think if Leroy Sané had completed his comeback by late December, I think we'd see him at the club already. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I think that he's kind of... Bayern know that he's their guy, and they don't want to bring in another player that could potentially hinder the possibility of him joining the club. And I think you make a good point talking about the loans that Bayern have brought in. Those are kind of those mid-range players that we're looking for in Ivan Perisic. And Coutinho, to an extent, though it's weird to call him kind of a mid-range squad rotation player, but Perisic especially. And I think the criticism I would levy towards Bayern is not so much that they won't move now. It's just the fact that this past summer, they didn't move for a permanent deal. We didn't go for a player like Steven Bergwijn when we could have got him for fairly cheap. And instead, we waited and waited and waited. And then, oh, Leroy Sané is injured. What are we going to do? And then we bring in Ivan Perisic on loan. We would have been much better off just signing Bergwijn in the first place as a backup winger and still pursuing Sané after that. That would be my criticism. I think at this point, once Kingsley Coman comes back, signing someone permanently like Bergwijn, we're not going to be able to guarantee him the playing time that they're going to want. So I think potentially that's why we see those deals not going through, because, you know, we all know when Kingsley Coman comes back, that's basically like a whole new signing. He's been a new signing about 13 times in his career for Bayern, so let's make it one more. But maybe, Sebastian, that's kind of what I see as the reason that we don't go for a winger in this transfer window, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe the Sané deal or whoever it is that's going to be in the summer has nothing to do with it, and Bayern just simply do not think it's possible to sign a good player in the winter window, even though we're seeing clubs all around us do it.
Yeah, I guess you're probably right there, and I kind of fear that you're right there, because I'm still not entirely convinced that Leroy Sané is the guy I want there, and I'm just not sure he's that safe bet that I would sink 90 or 100 or even more millions into. So yeah, that doesn't really make me any happier, I guess, your kind of explanation there. Yeah, because I'm still not convinced we need a typical winger in that mold. I think we can be a bit more creative in that respect. So yeah, and I'm still not convinced has the right mentality. I'm not convinced that he's going to be the guy he was right after this injury. So there are just so many concerns, and yeah, that's kind of a problem. Also, additionally, the whole Havertz deal is far from clear. I mean, I think we can be reasonably sure that we can sign Leroy Sané if we just pay enough at this point. That's just not true for Kai Havertz. With Havertz, there are so many more interested clubs all around Europe. And yeah, that's kind of concerning. So we might not do anything. Or, well, that's not quite fair. Not do anything is not true. But yeah, save up over the last summer, save up over this winter, just to find out that Leroy Sané is not the player he was and that Kai Havertz is not coming to Bayern. So what's going to happen then? I guess that's kind of my problem with this whole approach here.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the danger that you run into when you approach it like this. And I guess kind of the point that I brought up, that's one of the reasons that I'm a bit, it just makes me a bit more disappointed in how we handled things last summer, that we're in a situation like we are now, and everything's kind of up in the air. But I guess in a few days' time, we'll know whether or not Bayern will have bought a winger or another offensive player to boost the squad for the rest of the season, because they only have a few days left in the transfer window. But that's all the time we have for this episode. If you are a fan of the pod, or if you've enjoyed listening today and you haven't already, please do us a big favor and leave us a 5-star review. We would greatly appreciate that. If you want to get in touch with us, you can follow us on Twitter and tweet at us at SuperByronPod, or you can email us at SuperByronPod@gmail.com. All of our episodes can be found on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, all the major podcast catchers. We're going to be there. Thank you for listening. Go out and tell all your friends, and we'll talk to you next time.